This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joy War. Jack and Dee. Joy.
That's right, it's the Joy Law segment, the regular segment where we talk about legal issues of interest and concern to the LGBTIQ+ community and its allies. I'm always worried about missing a letter there. Mm. And joining us live in the studio to do the talking is the lawyer all the way from KSG Lawyers, is Chloe. Hey, Chloe, how you doing?
Hi, guys. Good to be here.
The crowd goes wild for the lawyers. There we go.
That's rare.
Now, we've been talking about surrogacy, mm-hmm. We've been talking about sperm and sperm donation and how the High Court has recently interpreted a case around sperm donation. But today we're going to look at the sad side of relationships, and particularly around children, when the partners separate.
Yeah, we are. We're going to talk about what happens at separation and what sort of things people need to consider when they're talking about what they're going to do with their parenting arrangements once they've separated into separate households. So firstly, the first thing to say, I suppose, is that there's a whole section of the community who separate who never have to see a lawyer because they can work it out themselves. So these are the couples that can either use friends and family or actually communicate with each other to basically come up with an arrangement that works for their family.
Yeah.
If they can't...
Adult skills.
Exactly. But, I mean, it's not always people's fault if they can't communicate. There could be issues with family violence. There could be just a lot of hurt and pain in the relationship breakdown, which really makes it really difficult for them to communicate. So when that happens, there's other options. So before you even think about seeing a lawyer, you should really consider going to mediation or family dispute resolution. These practitioners can assist you with coming up with an arrangement that works for your family. It's really important to think about the practicality of an arrangement. It's not just about your right as a parent to have time with your children. It's about your children's right to have a relationship with you. And that's really important to remember. As far as the court's concerned, and I'll talk about the court because that's where you end up if you can't work it out, they don't really care about your rights. It's about your children's rights.
Rude. Well, that's good.
That kind of makes sense, though, yeah. But how about... So we're talking about parents, about grandparents. Do grandparents get a say as well?
Grandparents do have a right under the Family Law Act to make an application for parenting. Generally speaking, though, it's because if you've already got two competing parents
who are fighting for
time with the children, it's really got to be about what's in that child's best interest. So if it's in that child's best interest that the grandparent is the more appropriate person to care for them or to spend time with them, then yes, that would be taken into consideration.
Okay.
It's very complex, isn't it?
Yeah.
It can be. I mean, if you can go to mediation and work it out and you can come up with a regime that works for you, the best thing to do, as we always say, is put it in writing.
Yep.
You know that.
Yep, there's two different ways you can do that. You can either do a parenting plan, which is a documented arrangement for the children that's signed by both of you, and it's a plan that you put in place. It's not legally binding, though. So if things fall apart and you don't agree, it can be used in court, but it's not going to be enforced by the court. So if you have a really sort of argumentative partner and you can't agree on little things and you really need that security of an order, we would suggest that you get consent orders, and they're made by the court and they are then enforceable by the court.
It sounds sort of very official, doesn't it?
It does. Unfortunately, some parties need it, because it really also goes down to the level of detail you want to put in these applications or these agreements, should I say. So it could be as simple as the children live with one parent for 5 days a fortnight and the other parent for 9 days a fortnight, and then they share the school holidays, and that's really the extent of the detail you go into. It could be as detailed as you have 3 hours on their birthday, or, you know, half of Christmas, or a couple of phone calls a week between 7 and 7:30 p.m. Like, it can be very, very descriptive. And sometimes with the really high conflict families, it's necessary because it stops arguments.
It's actually interesting. I was reading the media, I think it was early this week or late the week before, there was a case of somebody who was employed and they wanted to change his shift. Mm-hmm. He was a radio announcer. I think he was doing the afternoon shift and they wanted to move him to nighttime.
Yep. Mm.
But he couldn't take the nighttime shift because of the order for him to pick up the kids on certain days of the week.
Yes.
And it would have compromised that to have actually taken the job.
Yeah, it would
so,
do.
So the issue of employment law versus family law kind of collided.
Well, it really does become a problem, and that's when if you can't communicate with your ex-partner, this is an issue, because if you could communicate with that person, you would say, look, I'm sorry, I've actually got a job change or I've got a shift change, I need to change the arrangements, and they would be accommodating because they'd be putting the children first. But if they're not like that and they're going to be vindictive about it, you're really only the only option you have after you've done the family dispute resolution is to go to court and seek a variation to the orders.
But I can also imagine having gone through, you know, not personally, but I imagine some parents had gone through some very delicate and complex and sensitive discussions to come up with these arrangements, you'd want them to stay in place. You don't have to go back to the table and renegotiate.
You really would. You would, but they're also, I mean, you've also got to remember that a lot of people are separating when their kids are really young. So you've got changes in the kids' lifestyles. You know, they're going to have after-school sports. They're going to have different commitments. Right. You're going to have different commitments. You might repartner. You might want to move. Life is not stationary, and it's really sort of important that people understand that they need to be flexible and move with the family as it grows and changes.
Mm. So the point is, don't have children. That's what I'm taking away from it. I can't imagine seeing most of my exes, if not all of them, and then having to see them because of a kid.
Well, I've seen these sort of arrangements, although they're not legally binding, with animals as well. So even if you've got pets and you share them, then I have seen people try to sort of put parenting plans in inverted commas.
Oh, no, the dogs don't have
calling them 7 to 7 for the pets, so having time with them, and who gets to walk them. And so, the problem is, when who gets to pay the vet bills, that's a different story. No one really wants that responsibility. No.
That's awful. Love nothing or no one.
Oh, that's cheerful.
Just doing a crazy bit. No, of course. No,
you don't really
mean heart goes out to the people, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So if it does go to court, though, what's the story there?
So if it does go to court, obviously you've done your family dispute resolution, you haven't been able to reach an agreement, you'll go to court. Generally there, you've got your own evidence before the court about what you think is in the children's best interest, and then the court will generally order for you to go to a family consultant to do what's called a family report or a Section 11F report.
Section 11F.
Based on the section of the Act. One's a short form report, one's longer, but it's basically a psychologist or social worker who's employed by the court or privately who meets with the parties and the children. Right. So they'll interview the children, they'll see the children with the parents, and they'll see the parents individually. They'll read all their material, and they can make further inquiries with schools and things like that. But basically then they will come up with some recommendations about what they think is in the children's best interest. And then that forms evidence before the court that the court can take into consideration.
That must be quite confronting, though, to have an independent person come in and assess your relationship.
It can be. And when the recommendations aren't in somebody's favour, that's the first thing they throw, is that this person doesn't know me, this person doesn't know my family. And it can become quite contentious.
This scene's playing out in my head of the child acting up, or the child has too much sugar. And then you need to reprimand child in a way which is, you know what I mean?
Yeah, these people are professionals, though. So things like that. I've had clients whose children have had meltdowns in the appointments, and they've been frantic saying, what's going to happen? They're going to think I'm a terrible parent. But it's the way you manage that. If you manage that appropriately, then that's considered, well, they're managing it appropriately. These kids aren't angels. These parents aren't perfect. Mm. It's just real life. So, you know, these sort of things actually probably go towards showing the report writer a more accurate representation of the family.
It's probably more suspicious if the kids were angels and
Finnegan.
Seen and not heard.
I had a lot of that when I was
kid.
Were
you seen and not heard as a kid,
and
Jacqueline?
I'm fine. No. I was seen and heard.
And heard, I'm sure you were.
Can imagine too much.
The lawyers striking back. If dispute resolution doesn't work, the avenue is to go to court.
Yeah. You do, yeah. You do have to. I mean, obviously, I said you have to try dispute resolution before court because you have to get a certificate to enable you to go to court. But there are exemptions. So if there's severe family violence, you can get an exemption. Or if something's urgent, so if you think your child is about to be taken out of the country or your child is unsafe, you can make an urgent application and avoid the need to go to FDR for that.
FDR?
Family Dispute Resolution.
Mm, didn't you know that?
Section 11F.
Yeah.
Long form, short form. I'm learning stuff.
I've got a limited time slot here. I'm trying to work with what I've
acronyms.
Got.
Go, go, go. I'm going to be the LGBTIQ+. FDR. Thank you very much, Chloe, for your time.
Thanks,
if you do have
guys.
Any questions about these matters, by all means, email through to jackanddean@joy.org.au. We'll pass the questions on to the team from KHQ Lawyers.
You can find more Joycast and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.